You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 451. John, I did that great amount of Foley work there, and I sprayed beer all over my keyboard.
Oh, I thought you were playing pool. I thought that was you.
I thought you were cocking your gun.
See, well, I thought he was breaking the triangle in pool.
Well, hopefully that's not going to be a problem. Hi, this is the Punk News Podcast. My name's Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Unless the beer soaks into the innards of my computer and causes something bad to happen. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Grand Rapids-ish, Michigan, Mr. Tom Trauma. Tom, I always qualify that because I don't think you are in Grand Rapids proper, correct?
Nah, I'm out of town a little bit.
You're in like the
outer boroughs. Out of town. I'm like 15 miles out of town, and which is perfect. It's a nice spot to live, but I'm definitely getting to that crabby old age where, like, when I have to go downtown and park and stuff, I get pretty pissed off. So. It's happened.
So you're just going to become a hermit.
A hermit, dude. I'm not going to become a hermit because my house is still overrun with teenagers. But yeah, no, I'm just getting crabby. I'm just getting to that age. You know, I'm getting to the age where I feel like I can speak my mind whenever something irritates me.
That's good. I'm glad you feel free. Speaking of free,
man shakes fist at cloud. You know, that kind of thing.
Free of social convention, free of the rules regarding which clothing you can or cannot wear while recording a podcast, Mr. John Gentile.
Adam, right now I'm wearing my MC Hammer pants. I got on one of those Victorian England over waistcoats. You know what I mean? I got on a pirate.
Lying. It's way too hot for that.
And I got on, you know, men's stockings, Marquis de Sade style, and those belt and those shoes with a buckle on them, you know. So I'm ready to record, baby.
And a pair of dwarves underwear underneath.
And dwarves official underwear, which they only make in women's sizes.
Yes, so but it feels so sexy.
I have to make do. It feels very soft and comforting.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anyways, this is the Punk News Podcast. We talk about stuff that happened in the punk rock world over the last week. If this is your first normal episode because you subscribed when we posted 450, it is going to be way less ambitious than that one.
Way less John, you might say.
Way less John. Also, yeah, way less ambitious. We're gonna read some news stories and then give half-assed opinions on them because we don't prep for things. So
half-assed, uninformed.
In classic Adam White style, as soon as we get new listeners, Adam's like, this show's terrible. Don't listen to it. Don't listen to people. This show is captivating, compelling, and correct.
Don't waste your time, kids. Tuned. Come on, Adam. Give them a list of better things to listen to. Come on.
Okay.
Just kidding. There's nothing better.
Yeah. So, hey, do you want to win a gigantic Clash box set? Because we have a little opportunity to do that. John, what's skinny?
Oh, yeah. Listen, so this contest ends Friday night. So if you want to enter, you'll want to enter right away. Unfortunately, you have to live in Canada. We will have similar or kind of similar contests for people outside of Canada. But honestly, I think this is probably our coolest contest that we've ever. You, the listener, yes, you can win the Clash Sound System box set, which I've had, and it's amazing. It's got all the Clash albums plus three bonus discs of rarities, and that's some. It's got some really cool rarities in it. It's been remastered. I think it's like 2012 or 2014. Amazing sound. Plus, it's got a whole bunch of other goodies. You should check out the Clash documentary on Spotify. It's called "The History of the Clash" or something like that. But you should check that out. It's real cool. This contest is awesome. And to enter, all you have to do, two things. You have to live in Canada, but not Quebec. And you have to email podcast@punknews.org and say why you should win. And if you are a regular Punk News podcast listener, you definitely should enter, because why not? So listen, this is an awesome contest that we're doing to win the Clash box set. And we've got a great response so far. So hopefully we'll have more cool contests.
Just another reason.
I mean, this for is cool, to be our, right?
It is cool. I think it's totally cool. Another reason for us to hate Canadians, as if we needed another reason.
Tom, though, I'll give the listeners and you a little bit of a heads up. If you like this contest and you don't live in Canada, you'll be very happy in about 4 months or so. So stay tuned.
4 months? But I want to know now, John. In 4 months, the winner will get like a garbage bag full of like 100 flexies that I never listened to from me in the mail. That's the American equivalent. 100 crappy flexies.
But in those ensuing 4 months, but between now and John's announcement, your life is going to be pure hell. It's going to suck.
Anyway,
too late, Adam. It's too late.
podcast@punknews.org if you want to enter. And if you're a regular podcast listener, you should enter.
What if I have a Canadian P.O. box, John?
You can play that risk of due diligence on your end. I will not advise listeners one way or another as to how.
What if I use Adam White's mailing address? How would that work? Or is he disqualified?
Tom, please stop trying to get me to tell people how to cheat on the contest that we're running.
Are you currently holding the box set at your house, John?
It is
what if I drive to your house and smash a window and steal the box set?
If you want to commit robbery or burglary, yeah, you can get it that way. True.
Is this the one?
You can get just listen, kids. You can get almost anything you want in this life as long as you're willing to commit a Class A felony.
That's very true. Is this the box set that has the giant cigarette in it?
It is.
Is the giant cigarette going to be full of weed because of the new laws?
What is the giant cigarette? What is that?
This is a giant cigarette. I'm not exactly sure why. I don't remember. I've never had this box set because I'm not a lucky person.
You are Canadian,
but it comes with amongst like actual music on playable media. If I recall correctly, like a poster tube sized cigarette it might actually be a poster tube. But I'm not sure. John, you've owned this. What is the deal with that?
Yeah, there's like pictures in there. I mean, it does have a lot of interesting knickknacks. But to me, the real value of the box set is the albums. If you don't have them, they sound great. But the bonus discs are super amazing. Like, really. So this is a cool contest. Mm.
So yes on the weed?
Adam, if you want weed, I will send you money so you can go legally buy weed.
John, you should send me money. That's good. Okay, so
I thought you were going to say you're going to send him weed. I'm like, John, I'm pretty sure that's a felony too, but I'm not sure. International mail, but yeah, whatever.
So you should enter that contest. Any other pre-show business you want to get through here, John?
A couple of quick things. I'll just be real brief with this, but I saw Michael Rose of Black Uhuru on Friday, and it was a special show because it was supposed to be Michael Rose of Black Uhuru, first reggae group to win a Grammy, with Sly and Robbie. And, of course, Sly and Robbie are the famous Jamaican drum and bass duo who play drum and bass on literally tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Jamaican recordings, including all the classic Black Uhuru albums and all the classic Peter Tosh albums, all the classic Enoch Amodi albums, and many classic Yellow Man albums. And so it was kind of a special deal because it was Michael Rose with two of the guys that made these iconic Black Uhuru albums, Chill Out, Sense of Mia, Red, Anthem, and Black Sounds of Freedom. Unfortunately, Robbie Shakespeare got sick. So instead of Sly and Robbie, it was Sly and Lloyd Parks, which I didn't even realize at the time. But that was actually really cool, too, because before Sly and Robbie were a group, Sly was in a group called the Revolutionaries, which was kind of started by Lloyd Parks. So it was kind of like the ultra old version of the band. Plus, I didn't even know this before Michael Rose joined Black Uhuru. He did some of his own singles. His first single had Lloyd Parks playing bass on it. So actually, it was kind of a really cool setup. But I've seen Michael Rose twice before without Sly and Robbie or Sly and Lloyd Parks. And he usually does about 20 songs, and it's really cool. This time he only played – well, I mean, he played for about 2 hours, but he only did about 10 songs because every song was extended to like 10 minutes, and that can be lame. But in this situation, it was so amazing. I mean, it was super heavy. Michael Rose, unlike a lot of reggae artists, many reggae artists, especially when they tour the States, they're kind of there to have a good time and get the crowd lively. Michael Rose is kind of a weird guy, and he's extremely intense. And he didn't smile the whole night, but like in a good way. Like he kind of just had like this death stare at the audience, and like sang like super heavy, super soulful, intense renditions of mostly Black Uhuru stuff and a little bit of it. He did a cool version of "I Put a Spell on You" by Screamin' Jay Hawkins, which was kind of cool. And if you can go see this tour, it's got about a week left, I think. You definitely should. If you're a Black Uhuru or a Michael Rose fan, you definitely have to go see this tour because it's amazing. If you don't know a whole lot about reggae, this is actually a great tour to go check out on because it's kind of got that classic reggae sound, but it's super amazing and it's super heavy. And I felt a sort of kinship with the promoter, even though he's kind of like one level higher than I am, and that like it was kind of like a special show that like people hadn't foreseen, you know. And I'm not sure that everyone got why it was special. And I could definitely tell he was hustling to get enough people there. And I was kind of worried that like, you know, not enough people would show up and it would kind of be a failure. But there's about 200 people there, so I think he did okay at least. And so I felt kind of a kinship with him because you could tell – I mean, he was a Jamaican guy actually, the promoter, called Wagwan Productions or something. But you could tell that he was doing it because he really, really loved this music and kind of wanted to present like this special thing to the audience and allow them to experience like something like this that like you wouldn't necessarily be able to see or even think of that you could see. And it was an amazing show. It really was. So go see Michael Rose if you get the chance.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. You should do that. Now, John, we just came off of 450, which is one of our big ridiculous anniversary episodes. And any post 450 wrap up or thoughts or anything that you want to introduce? Well,
this is a real question for you guys, although I will mention is last year we asked you all to fill out a survey and we haven't forgotten about that. I guess one of the challenges of the survey is, I mean, honestly, I'm not even complimenting ourselves. The response of the survey was basically don't change too much. Like that was really like the survey, honestly, you know, so that's cool, you know. And so, I mean, how are you guys feeling? 450 heading towards 500. 500 is definitely going to be a big deal. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do something extra special for 500 because we have to.
I think the three of us have gotten into a pretty good groove overall. The new classic lineup.
A deep yawning rut.
Are you going to say it a rut instead of a groove?
So, John, should we talk at all about the thing that you and I were talking about earlier today? Like, does that factor into this?
Yeah, so people aren't surprised. This is not going to happen tomorrow. So let's let them know so no one's surprised and so we're totally on the level.
Yeah, okay. So what we think we want to do is, and we talked about this in the past, and I actually solicited opinion on this in the past, and I don't remember getting any mail on it of substance, so I don't think anyone really cares. But we're going to rename this show slightly. It is going to have some sort of name, like an identity of its own, and then that's going to be subtitled The Punk News Podcast. So it's going to be, you know...
Three Sexy Dudes.
The Punk News Podcast. Tom Trauma and Friends, The Punk News Podcast. Something like that. Because we want it to have its own name. Because what we will eventually do is we will eventually, in a way that is totally not annoying to anyone, and I promise this, we will do some sort of crowdfunding for some of it. And I don't know what that means. Probably a Patreon or something like that. But part of doing that, and this is just giving you a little peek behind the veil here, is that we want the show to have its own name and its own identity and its own brand, because And this is actually one of the things that the survey illuminated for us is while we're all, you know, regular punknews.org contributors. Well, I mean, like John and Tom are, I just kind of like hang around because I still have keys to the building. Right. But because we're all regular contributors there and that's where we source the news that we talk about, it makes total sense so far that we've been the Punk News podcast. However, we don't like Punk News is not a thing that any of us own. While the podcast is something that we take a fair amount of, you know, personal ownership in. And we don't want to give the impression, especially if we start asking people to, you know, donate some money, that we at all benefit from things like ad sales on Punk News, because like we don't see a dime of that. That has nothing to do with us. So yeah, there's a little bit of branding confusion cleanup shit that we're gonna do there. So we have a couple candidate names that we've been kicking around in the back end. We'll figure that out in the next little while, and we will ease into that identity, but it won't really change too much. I don't think so. I mean, we're gonna get rid of Tom, but he doesn't know yet.
Sweet. I'm gonna start a competing podcast.
See, we're gonna get rid of Tom, and we're gonna bring in two new cast members. We're gonna bring in our cousin from the rough streets of the inner city, and they're gonna learn how to, you know,
flawless
existed in our, you know, more upscale neighborhood. And we're also gonna bring in our bratty little brother that you've never seen before that causes mischief through his useful antics.
Ooh, and just like replace me and just make no mention of it and keep the name the same.
No, what we should do is
like,
that
coming from Grand Rapids, it's Tom Tarp, like, hey guys, what's up?
But then just to muddy the waters, you should then go, Tom, and start a podcast called the Punk News Podcast, right? Because we'll have ceded the name, and it'll be like when there was two popes, right? Where you know there's the you know the Pope in Rome and then the Pope in. What was it? The Pope in England, the Pope in France. Yeah.
The Great Schism.
Yeah. Or what we should do is, no, like we'll fight over the name Punk News Podcast, and Adam and I will be the Punk News Podcast, and Tom will be the Punk News Podcast TM.
Well, this is going to relate to a story later, but yeah, that would be great. Like, we're all like fighting and suing over this intellectual property that has virtually no true value.
That has no value. Like hiring, that none of us have lawyers. Any legitimate claim to. That's yeah,
exactly. Well, that, Adam, you sort of do. I mean, you've been around since the beginning.
I have squatter's rights to it at best, but
maybe. I mean, John could argue theoretically that the fact of the matter is he's been doing probably the lion's share of the work for the last half decade at least. So he's got, you two have legitimate claim. I'm literally just an old guy who's here for the party, you know. I'm the interloper, but I think that's probably why I get a little more grace from the readers. You know, I don't have to do any of the real heavy lifting. I just kind of, you know, I'm kind of like Uncle Joe Biden. I just show up and Uncle Joe Party Biden, you know. Hang up, grab young women by the hips, and have a good time, you know?
You just show up and hope no one brings up things you said in the 70s.
That's exactly, or the 90s, yes, in my case, but yeah.
So, all right, so anyways.
What I thought you were going to say, what I was afraid you were going to say was, we're going to rebrand this, and then we're going to water down the brand by introducing like five new podcasts, so that the name is virtually... You know,
no, worthless. I don't want to give anyone the impression that we have any more time or effort than anyone already has.
Yes. Well, no, I think you're right to, I think people assume that there's money being doled out, but we are all 100% volunteers. And I know that makes us mental defectives. So, but we're like a family of mental defectives.
Yeah.
You still want to say that?
I don't know. We could just say we're suckers. That's maybe the more PC way to say it. So anyway, so if anyone,
I don't know, that could be offensive to people who actually suck on things.
If anyone has a particular problem with this plan, go fuck yourself. No, well, you could write podcast at punknews.org and
please, two strongly worded letters and we'll change our plans. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So two strongly worded letters.
Podcast at punknews.org. Speaking of mail, John, is there any mail?
There's lots of mail. We won't get to it all because we're already running over. So I'll hit some mail and then we'll save some for next week. This is from, let's see here. We've got lots of mail here. Lots of clash. Here we go. This is from Jason. A couple of years ago, I went to a show here in Atlanta to see Pennywise, Strung Out, Unwritten Law, and Runaway Kids. I had never heard of Runaway Kids before and was blown away with their set. I've been enjoying listening to what little music they have since, eagerly awaiting new material. It's been quite some time since the show, and I can find very little info on the status of the band or if new material is in the works. The only thing I've managed to find out is that drummer RJ Shankle is filling in for Strung Out after they parted ways with Jordan Burns. I was wondering if you guys have heard anything. Keep up the good work, from Jason.
I never heard of them.
Go ahead, Adam.
No. I haven't. Well,
That's going to be my new podcast. People are going to write with me about an obscure band, and I will do everything I can to dig into their back catalog and study it and find out things about them. Well, Tom Trauma and Friends, coming soon.
Adam and Tom, they like to spit on the readers and say how much they don't care.
Don't have an answer to this question that you sprung on us.
The guy who spends more time fighting with readers than anybody, John.
Runaway Kids actually released something late in 1998, and here's what they released. They're still apparently a semi-active band. Here's what they released. They released a single and a video in September 2018. A single for Bad Habits, which is off an EP of the same name. They played with the Dwarves in January 2019, Pulley and Ignite. They hang around with Ignite a lot, and they were touring this winter, so it appears the band is still semi-active. They just released a new single called Bad Habits late last year. And whether or not they put out new material, we'll see. But they were active as of late last year. You can find them at facebook.com/runawaykidsofficial to stay up to date on them.
Wow, well done, John.
Thank you.
I'm sort of impressed that you did that. I'd be like, look up you don't have Google? What's wrong with you? I'm sure you got that from a Google search. I doubt you were like pulling out the microfiche and the card catalog and stuff.
I actually went to Discogs first, but Discogs was severely out of date. Discogs
rocks, man.
Discogs does rock, but it's not 100%. You know what I mean? Although
I always hate it when I get some obscure little punk record and I'm all excited and I go and it's not even on there. I'm like, oh.
Because then you got to do the work, right? Like, you as a good citizen.
I don't know how to enter things, man. I'm not really like good at computer stuff.
Here's from our good friend Bjart. He says, hell yeah. You want some punk jokes? Here you go. What do you call a punk without a girlfriend?
A punk?
Homeless. More jokes next week.
Good one. Bjarte.
He's written it a couple of times. We always enjoy getting Bjarte. Next time you write in, maybe can you write like your name phonetically so I can say it correctly? Because I'm pretty sure I'm doing it incorrectly.
And tell us where you're from.
He's from like Sweden, I believe, or Norway, something.
They love being there. Names full of consonants.
This is from Nathaniel. Hey, podcast, brace yourself, because here's a long one. First is punk rock bowling. I don't want to repeat too much of what John already covered, like Flag being incredible, but here are a few of my highlights. The Coat Hangers, unbelievably good. One of my favorite new bands, creative, inventive, funny, pissed off, perfect. Shame. John, how did you not see Shame? I've never heard of them before, but they are amazing. I also saw them at a club show on Sunday night, and they are 10 times better up close and personal. Here's what he says about Refused. Refused. I'm a pretty big fan, and it was my first time seeing them. It was intense. They also made me realize that the European bands aren't afraid to bring a whole lot of sexy to the stage in a way that the U.S. punks aren't used to. Shame brings the sexiness as well. Watching the Descendants go up and casual Friday all over the stage after Refused had just torn it apart sonically and visually, some might say spiritually, was a laughable juxtaposition. Rancid, one of the most important bands to younger me, but honestly, this set was only okay. They played too much material off the most recent albums. Don't nobody want to hear that shit. Also, Lars from Rancid shouted out to Casualties during the set, not to exploit it. I'm glad you talked about it on the podcast, though, because I also find it incredibly odd that he mentioned them and not Flag or The Damned. The Damned, goddamn, they were easily among the best live bands I've ever seen. They sounded excellent and had an unbelievable amount of energy. The second item on my agenda is to commend you, John, on recommending the movie Sorry to Bother You. It is excellent. I just watched it this afternoon and was really blown away. It's smart, beautiful, artistic, funny, powerful, and pretty weird in just the right way. They really don't make too many movies like that anymore. Keep up the great work, PN, from The Lone Punker.
The Lone Punker is writes on the comments on the site sometime. I wonder if it's the same guy. Probably, huh?
I'm almost sure it is him, yeah.
Hey, Lone Punker. Some nice observations.
John, I'm I'm pleasantly surprised that your Coop fandom there, your Boots Riley fandom had some positive response, because that's usually one of those things that people just will accuse you of talking about because you're interested in it and not because it is, you know, canonical punk news topic. So there you go. That must be very validating.
Well, listen, you can't argue with genius. Well, I don't know genius, but you can't argue with excellence, if you will. But also, the Coup are extremely punk rock. And so if we just don't get that, that's their problem. But thank you for writing in. Thank you for appreciating the Coup. And thanks for listening to the podcast. We certainly appreciate that, Lone Punker. This is from Liverpool Neil. And then we will we got a couple more letters. We'll say that till next week. So podcast@punknews.org. But this is from Liverpool Neil. His email is titled Episode 449, and a big thanks to Tom. Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here. First things first, I have to give a huge shout out to Tom Trauma and his buddy Scott for doing something amazing. Here's the backstory. 3 weeks ago, when Tom and Scott were coming into Chicago to see the Damned one day and TSOL the next, I was going to go with them, and it was going to be awesome. 2 days. But just before that, I had a bad fall skateboarding and I broke my wrist badly. Long story short, I had surgery on the day of the Damn show and had a titanium plate and 11 pins put in there. I did see Tom and Scott for the first few hours the next day, but wasn't able to go to TSOL. The lads were going to help me put my window air conditioner in, but we forgot. Fast forward to last weekend when they were in Milwaukee for Dummerfest. They actually made the 2-hour drive down to put my AC unit in for me. They were literally in town for like 20 minutes. It was so incredibly cool and generous of them. I can't thank them enough. That was so cool. And just FYI, it's not a case of an old guy stepping in on his kid's skateboard and wiping out. I've been skateboarding for 42 years and did this grinding in a pool, but it might be sadly time to hang it up. After episode 449, I have to completely agree with you guys about getting burned out on doing web stuff, especially with the dickheads who contribute nothing but complain all the time. I wrote a monthly skateboard collector's column on Skate and Annoy for 15 years. It was called eBay Watch, and it took me about 20 hours a month to research and put together, and I had thousands of readers worldwide. It was free, of course, and no pay was involved, but there were always the couple of pricks who would write in complaining that I should do it every week or that it sucked and they could do better. But of course, they never did. For a while, you can let it roll off, but after a while, it gets to you. So completely agree with your thoughts on that. I saw the Interrupters a few months back in Chicago. Simply put, they feel manufactured and not authentic. Too clean? Seems like Tim Armstrong is pulling a Kim Fowley. Interesting point all said. The album is okay, but live? Nah. Plus, I hate when bands do orchestrated ad-libs. They do the Rancid Operation Ivy cover in every set. It's not because they get wild and crazy at the show. It's not because they got it. Anyways, Cast is off and the Stitches came out today. The Stitches are getting better. Off to Liverpool in 10 days. Let's see what vinyl I can find in the record stores. Stay free from Liverpool. Neil.
He left today, actually. So today, Tuesday, he was in the air to Liverpool. So, hey, Neil, you're more than welcome. So, the bottom line is, anytime you reach out to any of the Punk News regulars, we will come to your house and do various errands for you, yard work, that type of thing. So don't be afraid to shout us out, kids. No, seriously, it was no big deal. It took a few minutes, and we were able to help a guy out with a bum arm. So that was it, if you remember the first part of the letter.
Kudos to you, Tom, for helping.
Well, thanks. Like I said, you know, readers, you need anything done around the house, just give us a yell. We'll come by. John's more than happy to help. He's got a mower, a can of gas, wheelbarrow, whatever you need.
That's right.
Paint a couple rooms. No, seriously, it was cool. Neil and I always have a good time, and I'm sure we'll hopefully get to hang out and go to some shows. I don't know when, but sometime in the future.
That's very nice.
I met another regular reader over the weekend, John, in Milwaukee last weekend, but I'm pretty sure he might be one of your tormentors. So I'm not going to shout him out.
Shout him out, Tom.
It was, I can't remember because I haven't had much interaction with Hello Glue Gun.
He might, you know, he's not one of the main guys. I mean, he might be a dick, but he might not.
It always shocks me when I meet these people, John, because like this guy, he's a nice guy. We got along great. I mean, it was fine, but he was another guy in his mid-50s. You know, I always expected to be like these 25-year-old like nerdy fanboys, but yeah. I'm shocked at how many older people read the site.
I'm shocked that anyone over like 14 has time to be a troll.
He was deeper into the Miller High Life than we were. But anyway, shout out to Hello Glue Gun, if you're listening. I got to meet, I actually got to meet a handful of people that I, like, I got to meet Toby Jag from Red Scare. We'd never met face to face before. I just met a handful of people. It was cool. It was a good time.
Man, you met one douchebag after another, didn't you, Tom?
Toby's a different guy too, but he's an all right guy. I mean, he's you know. Yeah,
I don't think he's an all right guy, but
I know you guys have had your issues. I haven't directly, but I know it. Everybody's got their hang ups, right?
We got off track,
but I went to Milwaukee and saw Dumberfest, and it was so much fun. It's the second time I've been to that event, and it's a smaller Midwestern, you know, punk fest, but it is done right, and it is really, really, really great. So if you're in the Chicago, Milwaukee area, I think they're probably going to start doing them every year now, because some local punks, including Nick Woods from Direct Hit, actually bought the bar that they do it at. So I think it'll probably be an annual event. So check it out, man. Dumberfest. Good times.
Cool. That sounds great. We should probably play a song before we get to anything else. Tom, we're going to let you sit out for a while because you're not sure what you want to do.
Yeah, I was saying, I don't have a song. I'll try to come up with one by the end.
Okay. Yeah. John, you want this or you want me?
Oh, yeah, I'll kick it off. Sorry, guys. I was talking about seeing Michael Rose with Black Uhuru. It was an amazing show. Let's play one of Black Uhuru deep, heavy classics. Let's do Guess Who's... Actually, Michael Rose originally recorded this, and then Black Uhuru re-recorded with Michael Rose on vocals. Let's listen to the Black Uhuru version. This is Michael Rose doing Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? Naughty Dreadlocks.
I can see.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk about some of the stories that happened this past week. This first one, I think, has been the big piece of news from an indie rock standpoint, absolutely. But, you know, punk rock crossover with this band for sure. But also just from the fan speculation standpoint, I've seen more humming and hawing and hot takes and opinions and theories about this than I have on anything in a while. So if you have not heard, drummer Janet Weiss has left Sleater-Kinney. Now she released a statement, and I'm going to read their statement here. Now, to put a little bit of context on this too, and to not maybe allow my read of the context to color too much of what I think is going on here. So Sleater-Kinney, they had been inactive for a few years after The Woods came out. The Woods, by the way, was like, was it maybe my album of the year when it came out? I loved that record. It's a fucking great record. They came back, they released a record called No Cities to Love. And then they were putting together this new album. The new album, which I believe is called The Center Will Not Hold. Yeah, the Center Won't Hold. The new album they recorded with St. Vincent in the studio. And her as a very prominent and hands-on and like a celebrity producer in a way. So someone that was going to have a major influence on what the record sounds like. So St. Vincent, her what's her real name? Annie Clark.
Clark.
Right? Annie, yeah, Clark. Annie Clark. Right. So she has like a huge career of her own. So her coming in and producing Sleater-Kinney, who at this point are sort of like a veteran band, is really a, like, what would you equate that to, John? Is that like a, that's,
you mean like what other instances where I equate this, like what other bands have done this kind of a thing?
Well, yeah, like is it crazy to say this is like an Eno Bowie kind of deal? Like,
no, I would not say that's quite accurate, because even though Bowie's a little bit older than Eno, they're kind of both, you know, glam rock, or from the vague glam rock era, and they're both kind of from the same world. I would say this is more like when they had Ariel Pink produce Madonna, artists from different worlds, one established that has a fair amount of cool associated with them, then bringing in the younger, cooler, or currently cooler act to kind of juice up the other main act. And the result was actually kind of the same as it was here, to tell you the truth.
Right. I don't want to get to the result yet, right? Because that's maybe where the opinion is. But anyway, so they have this record coming out. It's called The Center Won't Hold. It's coming out, I don't know, soon. I have no idea what the release date on it is at the moment. But in any case, the fact that St. Vincent is recording it is a big deal. So these are the two statements that kind of went out. And I think you can parse words out of these, and people have been fucking parsing words out of these. So this is what Janet posted. No, and we are, by the way, at this point, pre-release for this record. So this departure from the band takes place, you know, in the immediate pre-press period, in the immediate hype time for this new record. So
Adam, I'm gonna pause you. Great time financial wise for an artist to leave a band, or terrible time for the record, that is? Like, I mean, this generates some hype, but also it casts a pall upon the record itself, doesn't it?
Well, that's kind of what makes this all this interesting to me, is that, like, the, you know, Janet's part in the record is presumably done, but, you know, does all of this cause, you know, does it put a stink on the whole thing? So anyways, here are the statements. So Janet wrote a letter to fans. After intense deliberation and with heavy sadness, I've decided to leave Sleater-Kinney. The band is heading in a new direction, and it is time for me to move on. I will never forget the highs we reached, or the magnificent times Corin Carey and I shared. We were a force of nature. To the dearest SK fans, you're the raddest fans in the universe, and I love you. Experiencing the music together has been an honor of a lifetime. Thank you for sustaining me the past 24 years, and for providing without a doubt that love and connection are what saves us. The drummer, Janet. Right. So you can see, I mean, before I get this later, Kenny's own statement, like how much stuff that you can start to pick out of there and start to read into, like, you know, does making mention of the past 24 years, is that a little bit of a dig? Like, look how much time I put into this. Does signing off
why are we like that?
The signing off as the drummer, right?
Oh, I didn't read any of those. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I didn't read those like that, though, to tell you the truth.
Well, no, but I mean, people have, right? And I think that's what's kind of fascinating about this. Yeah. So Slater Kinney then put out a statement which said, we are saddened by Janet's decision to leave Slater Kinney. It has been an incredible privilege to work with such a talented musician and drummer over the course of so many albums, including The Center Won't Hold. It's a little plug. We thank her for joining us on this journey many years ago. We will always cherish our friendship and our time together. We wish Janet all the best as she starts a new chapter in her life. We are so excited for everybody to hear the record and to see you on the road this fall and beyond. Love, Slater Kinney. So those were the two statements that went out. And people have just been like all over this for all sorts of reasons. Now, I mean, they've been all over it primarily, and I guess this should be said, is because unlike a lot, like, Slater Kinney is a beloved band, like between cross genres and everything else. Like, they're one of the few bands that, you know, they do something and an interesting cross section of, you know, the music world is going to step in and pay attention. And I don't feel like, at least for a lot of rock bands at this point, you don't see that too much. So that's kind of interesting. But anyways, though. So yeah. So John, like, what do we do? Is this a cloud over the album? Are we to read between the lines that she was somehow unhappy with her, either how her contributions to this album were used, or maybe with the production direction or anything like that? Or is that just making up drama for drama?
Yes and yes. Will this classic cloud over the album? Yes. Is this likely due to production-based drama? Yes. As a casting a cloud over the album, and unless it's like maybe it's the most amazing album ever, in which case this will help out the album. But anything short of this album being like a totally kick ass, every single review says this album comes at a point of strife for the band. You know, the drummer has left and we're missing an important element, although she's on this record. And then that will segue straight to the point where they've released one or two singles. Both of the two singles are very St. Vincent sounding, in that the drums are essentially loops. And even if they're not loops, they're recorded in a way to make them loose and sparse. So the argument is, you know, Janet left the band because she's being minimized on this record. Is the minimization of Janet doing service to what Slater Kinney is? So that right away makes it a divisive album, and perhaps even more divisive, negatory, if you will. Adam attached to this thing a Reddit thing where all these people have these speculations, and one person had something that was pretty poignant. They said, when you bring in, you know, an outside force to help you with an established act, at first everyone's excited because this is a cool person, they've done lots of neat stuff, but once you begin working with this person that has had success on their own, you realize that their voice on the album comes at the cost of your voice on the album, which isn't always true. David Bowie worked with outside producers and outside people all the time. But I can see in this kind of scenario, with four people working together, someone's going to get squeezed out. And if someone doesn't get squeezed out, you get a jumbled mess. And so I think the answer essentially is Janet's like, I got squeezed out and I'm not happy about it. And this is not the kind of record that I want to make. And I feel as though I was getting voted out because, you know, other people in the band had, you know, different, had closer relationships to St. Vincent and maybe each other than they did with me. And it sucks to be the odd man out. One other thing that I wanted to mention is that in the Reddit thing, all these people have these theories. And on the Punk News podcast, we always have all these theories and suggestions. And it gave me pause to worry, because like when I've thrown a show where I've interviewed a band, you'll see people like you see so-and-so didn't even really want to interview John because, you know, but he had to do it. Or so-and-so is only – like that jackass Toby that you mentioned, Tom, once said that Joe Jack Talcum begged me to be on a show in exchange for me to promise to promote him. When that, it's clear that person has no idea what they're talking about, because I beg Joe Jack Talcum to play shows. And if there's one guy that's not a self-promoter, it's Joe Jack Talcum. The point being is, when all these people have all these ideas, often they have no idea what they're talking about. And so I wonder if that's a larger arc for the Punk News podcast and associate discussion, you know?
So, Tom, I mean, I'm curious here, because like, I'm not going to go, hey, Tom, you a big Slater Kenny fan, because I'm sure that's not your bag. But how deep do we go into cocking up a narrative for something like this?
I don't know. I sort of always hate the speculation. Just because you're trying to get in somebody's head that you have no clue how their mind works. I mean, the statement was a little terse, but hey, crap happens. She actually was not the founding drummer of the band. Did you know that? I do, because I'm sitting here reading Wikipedia while you guys ramble on about it.
Right.
So but
there's also the fact that she was a huge part of that band.
24 sound. Years or something. She was in the band. Yeah. She was in the band a long time,
but not just for,
I gotta tell you, man, I am so out of the loop on Slater Kinney. I just don't know much of anything about him. I don't have any negative feelings about them, but I guess I always think of them as more of an indie rock band than a punk band, and not necessarily my bag.
They definitely straddle that line, but there are songs on records like One Beat or that are I would say intensely punk in intent and in, you know, the attitude that was put out in it and all that. But that all that stuff came at a time when, you know, If you were to go ask someone, you know, what's punk, the answer is usually oh, it's four guys playing, you know, Bad Religion covers, more or less. So, you know, they were not that.
Well, their main foot push was kind of my dead decade, where I wasn't really getting into a lot of new music between 2000 and 2010. That was kind of their, even though they started in the 90s, their peak was in the 2000s. And I always admit to having a real weak spot, because my kids were really little in that decade, so I sort of have a bad, you know, a bad decade there.
Yeah, I'm really one of those right now.
Where I only I still listen to a lot of music, but I only followed the bands that I had started listening to previously, you know. I'm sort of back in the loop, but you know, I try to fight my indifference towards a lot of the new stuff. I try.
So yeah, I mean what sends me down the speculation rabbit hole here is that the two singles that they put out from this record so far, they do sound, you know, closer to, say, a St. Vincent recording.
Very rocky.
Yeah, the latest one that was out, or I think it's the latest one, which was called The Future Is Now. You know, it's kind of like a goth sounding. But there's definitely some if you listen to the drums on it, John's not incorrect to say it sounds a little programmed, and not I think necessarily that it's too electronic, but it's got a little bit of that what is that, I'm blanking on the term right now.
Triggers.
Trigger. What is the name for that beat that the that all of the, what's it called, the fucking German motor chick, something like that.
Industrial?
No. Oh, why am I fucking blanking on this? Hold on here. I'll get this.
Do you mean Four on the Floor?
Yeah, but the...
I have no idea where you're going with this.
Four on the Floor is boom, ch, boom, ch, boom, ch.
It's like...
Oh no! Here, it's like that Motorik drum beat. Yeah, it's that sort of 4/4 beat that krautrock bands popularized, right?
Like a danceable beat.
Yeah, yeah. Where it's very, you know, it's very purposefully sort of mechanical, and you know, benefits when you're doing this kind of angular, you know, very robotic sounding stuff, and that. I mean, that works for a lot of bands. It's totally not the kind of thing that I would expect out of Janet Weiss, right? So if she was to, I would have to imagine that if, like, she was to sit down and to craft her own instrumentation purely by herself, that is not the direction that she would have taken. But I don't know. But at that point, I'm way out there as far as speculating, but I'm not the only one. So yeah, lots of speculation. It's a weird cycle.
I mean, I love that people are so passionate about this band that they speculated about, but well, I think it's cool that there are people that are so passionate about that they speculate about it, but I also think it's sort of like fruitless to do and sort of silly. But you know, we've speculated about whether or not, you know, Danzig had electrolysis or whatever to get rid of the hair on his face because he never seems to have a 5 o'clock shadow. So I understand. I just don't have that with these guys, you know.
It is sort of heartening in a way where I'm like, oh, people care.
When you start talking about the production thing, all I could think was, oh, it's like when Metallica brought in Bob Rock and he ruined them. But that's probably not a good analogy for this, for St. Vincent and Slater Kinney.
Am I supposed to defend Bob Rock because he's Canadian? Is that a...
Is he? Is no wonder. To stick I knew up there for? Was something about him I didn't like other than the fact that he makes horrible records.
You ruined Metallica, Adam. You ruined Metallica.
I ruined Metallica. Yeah, sign up for my newsletter. No,
I mean, it was either the Black Ice in Europe or Bob Rock. I'm not sure. Because Black Ice is the bus crash that killed the original bass player. Anyway.
Anyways, yeah, Bob Rock. So where are we going with this? I don't know. Let's talk about the Cro-Mags. John, okay, you're going to have to...
Now, there's something we can all get behind, the Cro-Mags.
You're going to have to explain this to me. So, all right, so the Cro-Mags, which are a band that you talk about incessantly. So that band is now headed by Harley Flanagan. But are they? Is this the right one? Where's the initials? I'm missing the initials.
The initials are the John Joseph Band. So the Cro-Mags, and there's only one Cro-Mags right now, the Cro-Mags are releasing their first new music in 20 years. The Cro-Mags is Harley Flanagan, Gary G-Man Sullivan on drums, Rocky George, and Gabby Abularak, who played with Harley.
Oh, for the Rocky past. George? See, I was wondering who else was in the band. Rocky George, see, that's cool. That gives it a certain level of credibility in the hardcore world.
So out of the blue, with no announcement whatsoever, they released a new EP called Don't Give In. Quite surprisingly, at least surprisingly to me, it's on Victory Records. As a side note, the other related band is Cro-Mags JM, which will
never record new music, as far as you can tell.
They say they are recording new music.
Yeah, they've been saying that forever.
Well, true.
And the blood clot thing, which was really pretty good, was probably driven by the guitar player. Not John Joseph. Anyway.
Bloodclot was good, not great. You know,
I thought Bloodclot was great. I thought the album a couple years ago was actually great. I liked it a lot. If it had slapped a Cro-Mags label on there, I think people would have went apeshit for it.
I think you're right with that. With the new Cro-Mags EP, it's really good. I definitely dig it.
It is, man. I was really pleasantly surprised. But I'm a huge fan of the Best Wishes era. I don't think it sounds exactly like that, but I dig it. I'm glad that Rocky George is there.
What it sounds like is Harley's last album and last EP, both which were Harley Flanagan. It's the same band, I think.
You say they dropped this kind of unexpectedly, but the truth of the matter is that's why they were fighting over the name, right? So he could release this music under the Cro-Mags name. That's why he went through the trouble of doing this. And now that you know that he has Victory behind him, you understand why he had the money to do it. I think it was a long game, you know.
I think Harley's smarter than having Tony Victory pay his legal bills. Plus, Harley's married to an attorney, and so his legal bills hypothetically should be not that expensive, you know.
Well, Victory's got the deep pockets, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, Harley's not broke, you know. I mean, Harley makes a living, you know.
You think? I'm sure he does, but I mean, I don't know. I just can't imagine. You know, the music business sucks for. Literally 90%, 95% of even well-known punk bands can't make a living doing it. I just don't know that how he can live in New York and, you know, make a living with the little bit of music that he played.
But also you have to remember who his opponent is. His opponent actually once let that band's guarantee slip and it was much lower than you might expect. So no,
The other Cro-Mags.
Yeah, yeah. So nobody here.
Well, they play a ton too, though. I mean, that band is always on the road.
Yeah, but honestly, Tom, playing a ton at a lower-ish guarantee means you make almost money. You know what I mean?
Well, and they're on the road constantly, but all they play is Age of Quarrel.
So, anyways, I think this album is great. Do you think there will be Victory and Harley Shenanigans? Because if there's one guy you don't want to mess with, it's definitely Harley. And Tony Victory, he's had his fair share of shenanigans.
Oh, I can't
wait. His shenanigans have almost been exclusively with 130-pound 19-year-olds. And Harley Flanagan is not...
Pop child molesters.
Harley Flanagan is not 130-pound 19-year-old. Harley Flanagan is Harley Flanagan, so...
I cannot wait for when we get to discuss, 6 months from now, Harley stabbing Tony Victory. That will be a great moment on the podcast, in the one of the many Punk News-branded podcasts that we have going forward.
The Punk News podcast and the future name of the Punk News podcast do not endorse the stabbing of Tony Victory or
no, we don't endorse it. We just look forward to talking about it.
If it happens, we will. Man, do you remember the golden days of Tony Victory being like he was like the fucking kingpin from the Daredevil show of the punk rock world?
He was like Martin Shkreli before it was Martin Shkreli.
But he was just like there were stories about Tony Victory that came up like week on week, and what crazy shit, you know, him and the bands that on that label.
Oh, it was always about the lawsuits. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I
thought you were talking about like he was in Vegas, like doing coke off.
The lawsuits, but also like coupled with the whole kind of like being a tough guy is sort of like part of the Victory Records brand, right? So it was just, it was a magical time to be alive when the Tony Victory rumors were just floating around. Things were more innocent then. Things were better.
I never met the guy. Listen, he never forced anybody to sign a contract. I don't really know anything about the guy, so I'm going to give him a little bit of benefit of the doubt, but I don't think I'd sign my band to Victory Records.
And that's the thing, like signing with, I mean, listen, Victory has had, they've sued multiple of their own bands. So if you sign with Victory now, it's as much on your head as it is theirs. You know,
Once they get you locked up, you're not getting out of your contract. And right, and that's why I don't want to put that all on them. They don't force people to sign contracts.
True. However, you can do funny. And I'm not saying Victory, but Victory has been accused of being very funny with their accounting. You know, I'm not saying that, you know,
Tang Records. Read about Tang Records. Curtis Casella.
So you're saying that if you don't sign with Tang, you should sign with Victory? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Those are the two labels right now I have offers from.
Tom, I don't think we're going to be seeing you for a while.
I'm pushing for like one of the retro labels, like Rise. But anyways.
I mean, but you
I'm
know,
and Russell, for this right now,
if you're an 18-year-old kid, you don't know any better. You know what I mean? But this, I mean, Harley knows his deal. So I actually don't foresee a conflict because Harley knows his, you know, Harley is a very smart guy. So he's not going to sign something where he can get taken advantage of, you know,
the Cro-Mags catalog over the years. And I'm not going to blame Harley for this, but it has been so poorly managed.
This is the reason for it, Tom. It's unclear as to who owns what. Does John Joseph own it? Harley own it, or does the record label they've signed?
You can find about 50 different represses of both Best Wishes and Age of Quarrel, but like they're all it's mostly shoddy. I mean, it'd be nice to actually get some really decent, a nice decent vinyl repress of Age of Quarrel. Wishes too.
The was a Die by the Sword or something. That repress was like really nice. I actually think that
there was.
Actually,
I mean, I have like a chintzy version. I think it was on This Is Hardcore of like both those albums on a single CD. Minimally packaged. I mean, it's fine. It sounds all right.
The master job is pretty good on that.
Good, but like I said, there was no extras or anything. You know, I hate that when they don't give you.
There is extras on that, Tom. There's like about 8 or 9 live songs.
No. I mean, like pictures and just essays, that type of stuff.
Oh, I see. Yeah, fair. Well,
I'd like to see that catalog managed better. Maybe now that it's back in Harley's hands, maybe that will happen. I don't know.
I do think that you'll see reissues because, I mean, if they didn't settle this in the lawsuit, then, you know, what's the point of everything, you know? So,
yeah. Gosh, how much is this freaking 7-inch?
Now, when we said, what's the point of everything, of anything? Well, the point is that there's a new off record coming out. Well, they're making a new one.
No, we don't have a date on that. We don't have a date on that, do we?
No. I mean, they're recording it, though. So, you know, it'll come out. That's the plan.
$8 for the 3-song 7-inch, John. Killer, man. Killer.
So they are recording now. They've tracked a whopping 24 songs. That's quite a bit.
That's over a half hour's worth.
Yeah. So John,
you're gonna break through that 20-minute album cycle.
So this will technically be the follow up to 2014's Wasted Years. But how does this fall when we? How does this fall among the narrative of their what was it called, Watermelon? Of their failed to be funded, crowdfunded sci-fi movie / record. Is this that, or yeah, is this something else?
I'm very annoyed at people's denseness. I remember when the Watermelon thing came out because they announced on April Fool's, people were like, is this a joke? And then the band was like, no, it's not a joke. We're actually making a movie. And the people were like, I still thought it was a joke. You know, like how explicit they had to be to tell you it's not a joke. So now
it's kind of strange that they would do it on April Fool's Day. I mean, it seems like kind of a marketing misstep, doesn't it?
I think it was a bit of a PR backfire. Yeah. In hindsight, everything's 2020 is clear, you know, is clear. But I think at the time it seemed like a good idea. The new recordings, and people were like, I'm glad they're not making the movie now. They're just making an album. That's great. No, they're still making the movie, and these are the songs that will be featured in the movie. So the movie's still on. The album associated with the movie is still on. That's what these 24 tracks are, and I'm very excited. 24 tracks is a lot of songs. And I think most interestingly is the band's been saying these songs will be semi or significantly different than the first three LPs. So we'll see.
I don't want them to be significantly different. But I guess we'll see. I had to trust them. They haven't misstepped in their short career yet.
Off is sort of, I don't know, baseball batting. How much can you bat? Can you bat 1,000?
1,000.
Is that amount? Yes. Yeah. Off is off. I mean, yeah. Off hasn't really.
I can't believe
up.
It's been 5 years since their last album. Man.
But yeah, it does. I was reading that when I was reading 2014. Like that seems too long. Like that seems like something has happened in between. Well. They collected those EPs, right? That probably filled the gap. John, am I wrong?
No, that came out before the first full length. Yeah.
No, everyone's confused about this, and I stood on, okay. So originally, they were supposed to release 4 EPs. They released the first EP, but then things got botched up. So then they released the next 3 EPs with the other EP as one box set. So essentially, the first 4 EPs is an album, and actually it was released as an album. Then the next album was just called Off,
yeah.
And then the third album was called Wasted Years. They put out 3 albums. Yep. And interestingly, if you buy the vinyl record for Off, there's a sticker on it that says Harder, Faster, Louder. And an excellent, excellent, excellent music journalist wrote that quote.
Oh, is it one Jay Gentile?
That actually might be my proudest accomplishment as a music journalist ever, that my quote is on the front of Off's third album.
Don't sell yourself short, dude. Don't forget your little quote on the back of the Keith Morris paperback edition.
I still have to see that. You need to send me a picture of that.
I'll try to remind me. I'll snap a picture of it and send it to you. It doesn't list you by name. It just gives the generic punk news tag.
I'll take it.
You talked about this so much that I don't believe it actually exists.
I'm just jerking John around.
Yeah. you're gonna get the book.
I got the book from the library, didn't return it, and wrote it in pen.
And then it's going to flip it over, and it's going to say hyphen Dan Ozzie, and you're going to be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to say, just kidding. It's going to be signed Toby Jag, your friend Toby Jag, John Gentile.
All right, so before we get to more music here, we should we're going to talk about this Spotify story. What's the skinny here?
You're asking me?
Should I just read it, or have you got like a hot take that's more interesting than me reading a 5-paragraph story?
I'll give the quick rundown. So basically, Spotify. So recently, the Copyright Royalty Board increased songwriter payouts mandatory under streaming services. They released it by 44% in incremental amounts from 2018 to 2022. Under that payment scheme, if you will, there's three separate ways of calculating how much is due. And what streaming services have to do is use each scheme or model to calculate how much is due, and they must pay the songwriters the highest amount. And of course, the amount that they pay the songwriters is ridiculous. I mean, ridiculous, laughably low, laughably low. And so anyways, Spotify says, oh, we made a mistake, and we paid too much that we were supposed to, but we're not going to account to everyone to show exactly how much we overpaid. We're just going to deduct it from future payments made. Meanwhile, what's amusing is the overpayment mechanism and the overpayment recall that they're opting to use is part of the new Copyright Royalty Board. It's not a law. It's, I guess, a passed statute or really a passed regulation. They're trying to say that's not legal and should be overturned. So the irony here is Spotify screwed up, is refusing to explain exactly how they screwed up, and then they're using a law that they are saying is ineffective and not allowable to get their money back. So does Spotify have no shame? And the answer is no.
I am increasingly suspicious of this company's interactions with the music world, and this whole silly accounting plan that they're trying right now just underscores that. This is unrelated, but it's been driving me crazy. I don't understand why so many artists feel the need to like publicly and graciously like acknowledge their inclusion on this or that Spotify playlist in their public statements. Like I see you'll see it all the time where like a band will be like, hey, thanks Spotify for including us on the, you know,
10 hippest new bands coming out of Vancouver. On
your music to shit to playlist or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And, so now I'm not a Spotify subscriber, so I'm a little bit ignorant to, I guess, how culturally important, let's say, their playlists are. And I mean, I'm not saying that I don't use streaming music or anything. I use Apple's, and you know, that's my horse in this race, I guess. But I've never under the impression that like being on some playlist within the Apple Music ecosystem is a point of pride or anything like that. But I see artists all the time, like bending over backwards to thank Spotify, you know, by name, but like about being included in this or that. And it always strikes me as like, it's awkward. It's weird. It seems like they're doing it because they are obliged to, from a contractual standpoint, like, hey, we'll include you in this playlist, but you have to push it out on your socials that you're on this playlist or something like that. I don't know if that's the truth, but it seems like that. And it seems to me like I keep seeing artists that I would expect to have more of a frosty opinion about how services like Spotify are undercutting their way to make a living. In the next breath, you know, treating it like they're being done a favor. And it's weird to me. It's weird. The whole thing is weird. There's something about that company that I just find
creeps me out. Maybe you get on one of these. Maybe people do listen to these Spotify playlists, and maybe getting on one of those guarantees that you get enough play that you actually get a royalty.
I mean, I've never heard anyone. I've never heard evidence of it actually having like a serious monetary impact. I don't doubt that there probably are very popular playlists, because that seems like something that could exist. I just don't have any actual first-hand knowledge that's the truth, but just
I'm like, actually amazed. Oh, sorry, Adam, go ahead.
I don't know. I'm just like, it seems just something about the Spotify thing to me stinks and I don't know what it is. And this is not a like, oh, I love my physical media more, you know, old man yells at cloud rant. It's just like something about that company in particular. I don't fucking get. And it's,
I mean, that's the elephant in the room when it comes to streaming, right? I mean, they're the big guy.
I'm amazed that Adam is even suspicious that the company that was founded on the sole principle of how to get less money to artists and give their product away for free with their consent is up to something shady or, you know, ungainly. I'm surprised by that. But listen,
John and I have this, and
the way to make it end is stop using Spotify, stop using streaming services, and it goes away tomorrow and artists get much more money. That's the way to make it end.
Yes.
The consumer has been clear and the consumer is saying, well, I feel bad about it, but not bad enough to actually pay artists. And that's the answer. Except me. I'm the only schmuck that actually pays.
John, notice the sense of superiority in our voices when we say, homie, don't stream. I do not stream.
It's true.
I sit in my house and I listen to records. I listen to CDs in my car and I just don't stream. I mean, I know it's the future and a lot of people, it's not even an age thing because a lot of people my age, well, what do I want to screw around with a CD or whatever for when I could just pull up the whole album on my computer or whatever. But yeah, I don't stream either. I realize it can be convenient, but not for me.
Anyways,
I'd lose my smugness if I did it.
I got no shame, man. I use streaming services. They're incredibly convenient for me, but.
So which artist do you like to steal from the most, Adam?
So I'm here.
Of all the artists you steal from.
No, let's use this very show and the artists we've talked about as an example. So I am probably not going to rush out to the record store and buy the new Slater Kinney record. If only because from a money standpoint, while I did, I talked about The Woods and I talked about No Cities to Love, both of which were records I really liked by them. They're not at the top of mind right now for me. I'm not super excited about the new one based on what I've heard for it, but I kind of want to hear it. So when it comes out, it's the kind of thing where I'm probably going to go on to, I'll go on to Apple Music and I will listen to that record once at some point.
And they'll get 0.0004 cents.
They'll get 0.004 cents for me doing it, sure. But at the same point, like, I didn't
steal. That's more than the nothing you were
doing. I didn't go steal the record and hoard the MP3s. And I'm going to be selfish and say, I like having an avenue to be able to hear that piece of music at least once and not to have gone out and shelled out $25 for the privilege.
So, if only there was a service that you could hear music and sample it for free, perhaps in your car or in the convenience of your own house, where you could hear music without paying for it.
Oh, don't give me this radio argument. At what point can I what FM station do I tune to so I can hear the new Slater Kinney record at my convenience?
This tech, like a combination of Five Finger Death Punch and Judas Priest, you will be in luck when you turn on the radio.
This tech has a totally legitimate convenience purpose that I think is perfectly reasonable for like the average consumer to want to use.
These but companies, it's not reasonable for the artist. That's the problem. There are ways
that these things could be made reasonable. There's nothing inherently evil about the fact that with one of these pocket supercomputers that I have, you know, that I can pull up, you know, a song from a catalog and listen to it. There are ways that can be staged that, you know, are not predatory. It's just that
it's called Bandcamp.
Exactly, right? Like, Bandcamp, you can go on, you can listen to a record a few times, get a feel for it, and then after that, it'll start nagging you to actually go to buy it when you try to go listen to it again and again. It's not just allowing you to create a massive perma catalog or something like that, right? But there's the flip side of this too, which is that someone like, you know, I'm totally convinced you could have a Spotify-like service that gives you this smorgasbord of money, but you actually pay artists. I just think that they don't want to. Like, I think
it's part of it, sure.
Right? Like I don't think it is economically impossible to have an internet audio service that is of a reasonable price for people to pay for, that you actually turn around and pay money to the artist for. It's just that, like, that's not their game. Like, that's not Spotify's purpose. Spotify's purpose has been, like, amassing and never ending train of venture capital so that they can be a big tech company. Like, that's what they're doing. They don't, you know, the music is just sort of like a means to an end on their end. I'm sure in some fantasy of the Spotify executives, if they could somehow have Spotify the service, but not have any of the pesky artists involved, they'd be happy as shit, right? Like, they don't care about the artist end of it. And that's why, like, out of any of these, like, I can still sort of, like, begrudgingly understand Apple more. Because their evil is there plain to see. Like, they want to sell you another, you know, $850 pocket computer. And, you know, them having a music service is just in, you know, it's in service of that. That's what they're shooting to do. And it's just a, you know, it's one more thing to kind of keep you in their ecosystem so that the next time you're going to go drop, you know, a grand on a piece of technology, you're going to do it with them and not with the competitor. And it's, you know, it's more skeezy capitalism and everything, but, like, at least it's honest in a way. Like, they're not trying to pull that over on you. But Spotify, like, I look at them and I'm like, I don't fucking understand the motivations of this company. I understand how that company makes, you know, were some of these investments to be pulled, how they would actually make money charging what they do to people and having their free tier and all this stuff. It just does not make sense to me, and I'm suspicious. So we're way off from what the actual details of this particular story was, except that I don't know. I don't fucking trust Spotify. That's where I'm going. We should play more music. Speaking of streaming audio on your internet here. Let's see. I'll do one. John, all right, here, I'm going to pull you, in which I'm going to play a song of which the title I have not yet determined, because I don't know which song from this particular record I will play. But the band I'm playing is called, this is one of these pronunciation things. It's either Sigil or Sigil, depending on how you choose to pronounce that word, Sigil. It is a mild supergroup within the realm of punk rock supergroups, which is to say, if you know the people that are in these other bands, they're also in this band, but it's not like Eric Clapton isn't in it or anything. So, you know, great grain of salt on the word supergroup there. So Sigil is a band that features Bria Salmena, who is the vocalist of Friggs, which is this really awesome grungy Toronto-based band. And anyways, so it's Bria and Chris, who are the drummer from vocalist and drummer from Friggs, along with Brandon Lim, who plays in the band Yamataka Sonic Titan, and Eric Jude from Delilah. Anyways, both of those last two guys used to be in this really dark as hell sludge punk outfit called HSY or Hussy. And so they recorded the Sigil stuff with Bria singing back when Hussy was around, and it's just not come out until now. So the record is out. It's called Slow Ulcer. The band is called Sigil. It is just mean and dark. And Bria, who normally has like an incredibly, incredibly dynamic and like tons of subtlety in her vocals, is just growling like a, I don't know. She's totally caustic on this. It's a mean record. So anyways, this is some song, I don't know which, from the Sigil record Slow Ulcer. I don't know how you want to pronounce that. Sigil, sigil, whatever.
Sigil. The dwarf sigil.
So what else are we talking about on this here, the Punk News Podcast? We have a bunch of media to talk about. So the first thing here, Brian Wallstrom and Zach Quinn's new band, the Band-Aid Brigade, they have released their debut video. So Brian Wallstrom plays in Gods of Mount Olympus.
As a side note, did you guys ever hear that band before, like, Ricky came along? Like, I'd never heard of that band, but then everyone's like, oh, Gods of Mount Olympus, I love that. I never even heard of them ever.
They're a band that, for me, exists on a spectrum that I like to call, like a PR bands, which is to say, I'd never run across them before. Like, I'd never run across them in my civilian life. But in my punk news life, which is to say I have an @punknews.org email address, certain PR people that I communicate with decided one day that this was a band they were going to talk about incessantly. And I don't know. I don't know if it is, if there is actual popularity backing them or if I'm just on the wrong end of an email list. But so, yeah, it's a weird perspective. Anyways, so Brian plays in Gods of Mount Olympus. Quinn plays in Pairs. So they have this band called Band-Aid Brigade. They've released their debut recording. The video that you can check out on YouTube is called, for the song called Travel Light. And I, Adam White, have not watched it. So I'm going to step out of this conversation now.
Well, I watched it. And
I did too. I prepared. I watched two videos for this week.
Woo!
What do you think?
I'd pat myself on the back right now, but my back's really sweaty and I don't want to touch it. What did I think of the video? Well,
it was with the song, really.
It was clearly a send up on like 80s kind of blue eyed soul rock and roll. The first thing that came to mind with me was like Hall and Oates.
Yeah, me too.
And I thought the video was like a pretty funny homage to that. But at what point does a tribute to a sound stop being a tribute to a sound and just become that shitty sound? So I really didn't care too much for the song, but I found the video amusing.
Here's what I felt. This is a pop song.
It's yacht rock, which somehow
people are calling it yacht. To me, yacht rock is more like Steely Dan or Seals and Crofts.
Steely Dan was too progressive. Seals and Crofts, I think, would be fit in that category.
This has got too much of an 80s vibe to me to be yacht.
Yeah, but that's yacht. But isn't like Hall & Oates, isn't that like the ultimate yacht rock band?
I don't think Hall & Oates is yacht rock. I think Hall & Oates got retroactively applied to that just because they dress like Seals and Crofts. You know what I mean?
I think you might be too close to that band because they're from Philadelphia. I think you may not see them for the way the world sees them. But anyway,
I don't think Hall & Oates.
Anyway, it's that type of pop rock, you know, the type of music that was big in the 80s.
Right. So here's the thing: I thought this song was okay. It wasn't. See, the difference between this and like Hall & Oates' mega hits is Hall & Oates' mega hits are a little bit more catchy, you know. And
no question.
That's the key to making a mega hit, if you will. Not that that's something simple to do, but that's
well, this is not going to be a mega hit. This is a novelty thing, right?
And so, but here's the thing is, I mean, this is a pop song. If you heard this on the radio, like on, you know, like if you were in, you know, Kmart and then you heard this on the radio, wouldn't even hear it. You wouldn't even hear it because it would fit in with everything else. I wonder if they're doing themselves a disservice by clowning around so much in the video. I would suspect that if they played this straight and if they didn't use their punk names and if they sent this to some music guy, you know, some act at BMG or Sony, there's not a definite chance, but a chance that this could get picked up as an actual hit and actually be on the radio. So by making it goofy, we all laugh, say, aha, this is kind of funny. But then what's the end purpose here? I mean, it kind of shoots itself in the foot either way. If they do it silly and goofy, well, it's a laugh. No one gives a shit, you know. But if they went all in, then they would at least have the chance of actually, I mean, they're quote selling out or whatever, but they at least have the chance of actually doing something with it. So I think by having the goofy video, you stun it from the start and it'll never go beyond what it is.
The video was fun.
And the band name is terrible. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, they're both nice guys, I think. I've talked to Zach a couple of times. He's a nice guy. Band-Aid Brigade is a terrible name.
I agree with Zach. One summer, I saw him like 3 or 4 times in a row, and we had conversations. He's a nice guy. But why is he doing everything except for pairs?
You know,
that's
why?
My question. They're all
because pairs tours incessantly, and my guess is they're a little burnout.
They really don't. They haven't been really doing much, honestly.
In 2016 and 2017, they were on tour like 9 months of the year.
Yeah, and they still play small dies. They're probably not really making any money. Yeah,
and they talk about how like that, and honestly, I wonder if they're bad at managing money because they toured all the time and they were always talking about being broke, which is possible. If you're a small band and you tour all the time, then you can be broke. But I see a ton of kids in pair shirts. So I wonder if they just were a little bit smarter with their money, maybe they would be in a better situation. I don't know. You know.
I don't know either.
So yeah, you can go check out that video. It's on YouTube. Which of these other media stories you guys want to tackle? It's up to you.
Let's do Amol, and if you guys want the other two, we can. And if not, then we don't have to. Amol and the Slivers have released a video for their song. It's the new version of Some Mutts Can't Be Muscled. The original version was on a 7-inch. The new version is on their debut LP, which I really, really liked. Not everybody loved. The new LP is not quite as catchy as the singles, but in my review, I argue that is a good thing because when songs are super catchy, they kind of burn out quicker, whereas if it's not quite as catchy but more intense, it's got more replay value and perhaps it's somewhat deeper. They released a video for Some Mutts Can't Be Muzzled. It's a relatively simple video. It's just them kind of like dancing around in L.A. in the darkness. I like the song a lot. I like the video a lot. I've got some comments on the video. I don't know if you guys wanted to comment on it first.
The song's a pretty good rock and roll ripper. I mean, I don't know that I love it, but I like it. I think it's a good song. You know, somewhere between punk and hard rock, like AC/DC style hard rock. But the video, you know, I think a lot of times in punk circles, we like, you know, there's like a certain amount of elitism and intellectualism, but this video is, I mean, they're selling the sexiness of the lead singer. That's essential. You know, she's wearing shorts at some point, like little shorts and kind of pretending to be a boxer. At one point she sort of like bends over and her ass cheeks are hanging out. I mean, this is purely, you know, trying to turn men on to get into this band. Right, John?
Well, that's the question that I have, because this is not a situation. Well, and the question is this even a right? I mean, dudes take their shirts off at concerts all the time and no one even talks about it.
Oh, like, I hate that.
Well, true. But I mean, dudes do it all the time.
You know, I like it when I go home covered in other people's sweat. That's
so
awesome.
So if a girl's wearing something a little skimpy, and I mean, honestly, it's not even that skimpy compared to some other things that you could see on like MTV or whatever, is it even fair to talk about that in a sexual context? But further, this is not the concept of some record guy saying, all right, Amy, you're a good looking girl. We need you to dress skimpy to sell records. She has kind of always made this as a cornerstone of her presentation, if you will, kind of in line with Plasmatics that we were talking about earlier, in that, yes, she's good looking. She knows she's good looking, and she's using that as a point of power that she has, one of her assets and her other. But the other point is, even though she is really good looking, all of that aside, the music is awesome. So I wonder if her, you know, kind of and here's the thing is this even intended for me? Can maybe other women look at this and say, wow, she's cool. She's awesome. She's doing everything. She's an awesome lyricist. She's an awesome performer and she's good looking. I wish I was her. So is this even meant to be speaking to me, or is it speaking to other women? And that's the thing. And maybe that's the question that it's supposed to raise.
It's speaking to you, John.
I don't know about that, Tom. I mean, I don't know.
You're missing the point right in front of you.
I think by boiling down and just saying she's good looking and that's the point, that's not fair to her or the band, because that's not all this video is. It's one aspect, she's very good looking, true, but
that's all the video is. I'm not saying it's all the band is or the music is, but it's definitely.
Well, that's another point, is maybe by featuring that, but that is a question that I don't have the answer towards, but by showing her, you know, in the skimpy clothing looking good, maybe that actually does a disservice to her and the music, because that's what we're focused on, not what we should be focused on. But then the other aspect is, well, is it even fair for us to comment on that, because maybe it's not speaking to us? I don't know, because if it was a shirtless dude in, you know, short shorts, no one would give a shit. You know what I mean? I mean, how many?
I would give a shit and not watch it again.
Well, that's fair.
I, you know, is she bears quite a striking resemblance to Sherry Curry, don't you think?
She's blonde. Yeah.
I don't know. She reminds me a lot. Anyway, I'm currently reading Cherry's biography, so maybe I'm in the right mindset to think of that. But anyway,
isn't the answer to this? Sorry, Tom.
No, go ahead. I'm just filling space.
Oh, well, like, wouldn't the answer to this just be all about just her agency in it? Like, if she chose to use sex to sell and to, you know, to dress the way that she did for that video, and that was the way that she wanted to present it, then all the power to her. And as long as it wasn't, you know, some skeezy record label decision or some, you know, shallow marketing ploy, then,
well, I'm gonna say it was a shallow marketing ploy, but still, more power to her. She can do whatever she wants. I'm not casting a negative judgment. I'm just saying that this is, you know, listen, you watch some of the old Blondie videos. Debbie Harry was a very attractive woman. She was using her sex to sell the music. It's a tool that she has available to her. It's not, you know, she wasn't doing anything wrong.
I wish we had a girl in this episode, and I kind of wish we didn't have a girl, because I wonder if having a girl in this episode kind of puts the girl or the woman in an unusual position. But Adam, here's the question and the follow up on what you're saying, and this is her agency. From the beginning of this band, she's had this kind of style, right? So then, is it okay for the viewer to say, "Boy, she's hot. I like looking at her." Is that okay to do? You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I mean. If she's choosing to present herself in that way to garner that kind of reaction, I don't know if I would necessarily fault you for having that reaction, at least having that reaction in like a tactful, private way that doesn't involve the rest of the world. What I'm saying is that, like, you can look upon that video and appreciate it, John, as much as you want, but you don't need to be catcalling or, like, you know, internet catcalling about it, right? Like, if you're gonna look at, you know, someone that you think is attractive in a piece of media, I'd hope that you can keep your opinion in your pants, basically, and not make that your main talking point on. I don't mean you. I mean, like, just like people. Like, I guess I'm speaking to, like, YouTube commenters. Like, if you're a YouTube commenter and you appreciate the way that the singer of this particular band looks, that's great. Maybe shut up.
But then here's a subsequent question. And this is a problem the Vivian girls had. The Vivian girls are all very amazing musicians and very good looking young women. The problem that they would have is people be like, "Oh, the Vivian girls are so hot," when they weren't even like addressing looks in their music. So it's like, if a reviewer turned in a review, you know, "The Vivian girls, the music is great, and boy, are they hot," I'd strike that line in a second. Inappropriate. They're not choosing to present themselves in that way. Adam, what if you were editing reviews and you got Aim on the Sniffers? I saw them live. They rocked. They were awesome. And boy, is the lead singer hot. Boy, do I like to look at her. What do you do with that?
No, see, I would ask that. But you could approach that topic in a way that I guess in a way that addresses its role in the art that's being presented to you. So if the review was going to talk about, you know, was going to say, well, basically what we've just been saying, where, you know, she presents herself in this way, and that factors into what the band is trying to. What artistic statement the band is trying to put out into the world in this or that way, then, you know, sure, valid thing to have a talk about or to have a discussion about. If it's just, you know, "Woof, I appreciate this," then no, that's not that to me is not that it's not relevant in reviewing music. If we were doing reviews of attractive people, then that would be totally. Now, John,
because there's nobody better to judge attractiveness than the three of us.
So think about this. We're going to make a website where we can put all the people on, right? And then you can judge if they have like an attractive face or not, right? And we're going to call it like the Facebook, okay? And it'll just be us and just in our dorm for now,
the Facebook,
right? The Facebook, news, right? Podcast. The Facebook, right? So we'll just have it in our dorm, right? It'll just be something we'll do around campus. It's not going to get out of control. and become like a fucking Skynet or anything, right? But we're going to do this. You in?
I'm in. And not only that, Adam, if people are dumb enough to give us their personal info, well, then they're a bunch of idiots. And I'm sure this comment won't come to back to bite me in the future, because even if it does, it won't even matter, because people are so dumb, they'll give their information out anyways on Facebook, and it will become a giant thing. And and we will usher in the new era of communication.
Great. Okay, perfect. So Jesse Eisenberg is going to play Tom Trauma, right?
Yes.
Anyways, yeah, so I don't know where we're going anywhere else with this. I'm trying to keep us from falling into a weird hole.
I hope so. And honestly, we have had females on the show, women on the show. I shouldn't say females. We've had women on the show, and we will have more women on the show in the future. And then maybe we'll even have some all women episodes, which I think would be cool too. You know, so maybe.
That'll be a separate offshoot of the Punk News
podcast. Oh, yeah.
Women's Forum, a Punk News podcast. You know, the thing with this stuff is, I think we all know in our heart of hearts where the sort of creep line is. Because the fact of the matter is, if you are reviewing a live show or something and you don't mention it in passing, if the singer was a very attractive woman in a non-creepy way, you're sort of doing it an injustice, you know? I don't know. I think the three of us know where the line is. I'm not saying everybody does, but I mean, I think, you know, everything is on the table when it comes to discussing these things.
If you can't figure out where the creep line is, Punk News Podcast listener, that you should really work on that.
I'm a middle-aged white man. Apparently, almost everything I do is creepy, according to some people. So, but no, I think it's a kind of a sensible, you know, there's a certain amount of sense that can be applied to it. But I'm not a woman, so I guess I'm open to be educated a little more on this subject.
Tom, you got to kind of assume that you're being creepy all the time, and you just got to strive.
Pretty much,
you got to strive to be less creepy.
But the more I try, the harder I try to be less creepy, I think the creepier vibe I give off. You know, I'm going to change my punk name to Hey You in the Bushes.
But I was out for dinner with my boss the other night, and we made some mention of the fact that we rarely are able to get all the family together, or to get all of like the spouses of the people in our organization together for one of these little gatherings. And it's mostly because like a lot of us who work there have the young kids. So we can't, you know, we just can't find sitters as easy. And my boss, who has no kids, is kind of just like, well, you live in a neighborhood with like a lot of, you know, teenagers and things. You can't just go find out like, you know, which of those girls wants to come babysit your kids. And I'm like, yeah, like a 30 something year old guy, I'm going to wander around my neighborhood
just go knocking
and talk
on doors,
to teenage
Adam,
girls
great.
And find out which ones want to come over to my house. This is a great plan.
Here's what you do. You just knock on doors and say, do you have any 13 or 14 year old daughters?
Yeah. It's just like,
I'm looking for some 13 or 14 year old girls. It would be fine, Adam. It'd be fine. You're Canadians. Everybody knows you're just friendly folks.
Nothing's ever creepy or weird up here. So, all right. Anyways, John, you want to talk about any more of these stories, or are we going to fuck off?
Yeah, listen, we've
rambled on enough.
people have had enough of us, Dad. They've had enough.
And there's only, you know, and only one Danzig mentioned this week again.
Forced one, though.
We still haven't talked about the movie, John. We have to talk about the movie. You have to get a bootleg copy of it and send it to me. I need to watch this movie, and we need to discuss it. Maybe that'll be a separate Punk News Podcast offshoot, the Danzig years.
Once it comes out, we'll definitely discuss it for sure.
Halloween.
Yeah, that's a long time to wait.
It's right. A long time to wait, and it's you have to pay. It's like on a pay-per-view system, and I don't want to pay for it because I know it's going to be horrible. So if you could bootleg it, that'd be great.
Do you just fucking describe streaming?
What's that? I don't know. I do stream television.
Oh,
I don't stream music at home, but I do stream television. You know why? Because I don't place any value on television. I think it's garbage. Oh. Music, I have value. I place value on
some of it. Speaking of garbage, do you want to play anything before we We had,
you know what? I don't have a song. I used all my prep time to watch two music videos and I didn't pick a song. So
that's okay. All right. So podcast@thepunkies.org.
We'll just walk off into the sunset.
Yeah. Podcast@thepunkies.org. That's how you email us. John, do you want to leave anyone with any notes, any words of wisdom?
Go see Michael Rose.